Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Every Sunday morning at 9, join me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM. Each week we'll be exploring the wonderful world of modern jazz. From hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz, Sunday mornings at 9 on Sheffield Live.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3, here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You are listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is the film show on Sheffield Live, and yet again, it's just me, Martin, for this week. Hello, and yes, we're back to our usual intro music there, which, if you never knew what it was, it's a tune called Jitterbug from the score of Mulholland Drive. And as you will see when I get on to our further music choices and our discussion bits later in the show, this fits in rather snugly with that. So to kick off with then, some bit of gossip, bit of news. I'm going to give you the cast list from something and give you a moment or two to wonder where all these actors have worked together. Sylvester Stallone, Robert De Niro, George Clooney and Samuel L. Jackson. Where have those four great cinematic talents worked together before? Because there is a new stellar name of cinema to join them. I give you Dame Olivia Colman. Yes, Her Royal Highness is doing a Warburton's advert. Or maybe in a slightly sexist way, she's doing crumpets. Yes, the new Warburton's adverts have been unleashed across the world, where Coleman raids the Warburton's factory, ostensibly looking to whether or not to give it a national treasure certification. And I've got to say, well, maybe is that what she's trying to say she is in this? Is there a subversive message, a subtext to all this? Well, anyway, she goes through all the comedic riffs on this, and it goes on forever. And she ends up with a car full of crumpets. So that's one to look out for, or not. Cannes, the Cannes Film Festival, opened up this week for its 2025 iteration. And there are some very interesting films in the lineup. The thing is, at the moment, as is always the case, it seems, with Cannes, it's difficult to get a huge amount of information on them apart from, you know, a one-line description. But I think over the next week or so, we should be able to rustle up a few trailers and a little more information on the films that are going to be shown, and also get some reviews. Although one of the films that was screened at Cannes in the first few days, we are actually reviewing later on in the show, as it's out at your local cinema. But amongst the filmmakers who will be premiering their latest films are such luminaries as Kelly Reichardt, Julia Ducournau, Wes Anderson, again, Joachim Trier, also, films from actors such as Scarlett Johansson, Kristen Stewart, and Harrison Dixon. Most of these films are going to be hopefully chatted about next week when we've had a chance to find out a little bit more about each one. But as these things are very new to the world, we wanted to try and get a bit more information on them to talk about them next week. So when Denise is back next week, and I hope you're having a great time today, Denise. Although I did see further down the list, there's a documentary, Bono, Stories of Surrender. And believe it or not, Bono will be at Cannes. That guy would go to the opening of a fridge door, wouldn't he? There you go. Well, that's for a more detailed look at the Cannes lineup. We promise to bring that with you next week. But now, yes, we have lost a film director this week, James Foley. Foley passed away earlier last week, as that would have been. And Foley was a director who had a bit of a varied career. He started off doing a lot of work with Madonna, making videos for her songs, and graduating up to making Who's That Girl feature film in 1987. But he also made such things as At Close Range, a thriller with Christopher Walken and Sean Penn. And he also made a couple of great sort of neo-noir movies, such as After Dark, My Sweet, which was made in 1990 and was an adaptation of a Jim Thompson novel. And probably his finest moment was in 1992, when he made a film adaptation of David Mamet's play, Glengarry Glen Ross, which had a cast of, well, it's almost unbelievable, this cast they put together for this. Al Pacino, Jack Lemmon, Alec Baldwin, Alan Arkin, Ed Harris, Kevin Spacey, Jonathan Pryce. Absolutely balls to the wall, flabbergastingly brilliant adaptation of the play, and it still stands up beautifully to this day. Then Foley worked a lot in television, and working on such shows as Twin Peaks, Hannibal, and Billions was and he did about a dozen episodes of the Kevin Spacey House of Cards series, which, if you remember, was then quite abruptly curtailed when Spacey had a number of sexual harassment allegations made against him. And Foley then ended his career, quite peculiarly, with some 50 Shades sequels, 50 Shades Darker and 50 Shades Freed. I must admit, I've never seen a 50 Shades movie or read a 50 Shades book, so I will remain in blissful ignorance about those for now. But moving rather briskly along, then, we come to this week's trailer trash. And it certainly looks quite striking. It's called Honey Don't, and it's a film directed by Ethan Coen, and it's described as a spiritual sequel to Drive Away Dolls, which was out last year. A fairly low budget sort of a grungy, again, neo-noir sort of thing. And this new one, Honey Don't, is a private eye movie by the look of it. And it's full of really terse, smart, hard-boiled dialogue, as you will see if you watch the trailer. It stars Margaret Qualley, and I have to say, back in 2024, I seem to see an awful lot of Margaret Qualley in the films that I witnessed by her. I think I'd even blush if I was to bump into her at the bus stop. But fortunately, that's probably not going to happen. But anyway, this looks, as I say, it looks razor sharp. Margaret Qualley stars as a private eye dressed to the nines in high heels and seam stockings and using her sexual wiles, it would seem, to get the info to solve the case. Amongst the rest of the cast featured in it are, let me call it up here. Here we got it here. Aubrey Plaza, who was maybe one of the few good things in Coppola's disaster Megalopolis at last year's Cannes Film Festival, and who else was it? Charlie Day. Oh, and Chris Evans in there. The trailer looks absolutely gorgeous, and I think it's going to have lots of quotable lines for us to use when it's finally out and we're reviewing it. But that's it for gossip. So today's music, what to talk about? Well, it's been a bit of a roller coaster week over in Washington DC with President Trump making lots of announcements, many of them film-related or film business-related. And so I decided to play a selection of tunes which some of them have Hollywood in the title, some of them are about Hollywood, and it's a bit of an eclectic mix. There's no rhyme or reason to any of this, so I'm warning you now. And to kick off with, to show you how weird it's going to be, here we have Nancy Sinatra and Hooray for Hollywood.
Hooray Any office boy or young mechanic can be a panic with just a good-looking pan. And any barmaid, she can be a star maid if she dances with or without her fan. Hooray for Hollywood, where you're terrific if you're even good. Where anyone at all from Shirley Temple to Amy Semple is equally understood. Go out and try your luck, you might be Donald Duck. Hooray for Hollywood. Hooray for Hollywood. That phony, super coney Hollywood. They come from Chillicothe's and Paducah's with their bazookas to get their names up in lights, all armed with photos from local rotos, with their hair in ribbons and legs in tights. Hooray for Hollywood. You may be homely in your neighborhood, but if you think that you can be an actor, see Mr. Factor, he'd make a monkey look good. And all your friends will say, hey look, there's Doris Day. Hooray for Hollywood.
That was Miss Nancy Sinatra. This CD player isn't working how it should be. That was Miss Nancy Sinatra and Hooray for Hollywood. And so this week then has seen the Donald give forth about where he sees American film industry. Now, you've probably all heard about the tariffs that he's spraying around the world, none of which seem to make any practical, logical or economical sense. But, hey, he knows best. And his attention was turned this week to the way, as you would expect him to say, the entire world is screwing the American film industry and has been for decades. And he wants movies made in America again. Don't he just? His announcement, which I think was pretty much put out on one of his tweets on Truth Social, so there would have been a lot of block capitals in that, didn't really give any idea as to what these tariffs actually meant or in any way how they might be applied. It was just a statement that he squirted out, and as his answer normally is when he's asked for any more details, how the lawyers are looking at it. So they got me thinking, well, what does he think? How does he think the film industry works now? I mean, if it must be one of the best examples of an industry that works on a global platform. When you go to the cinema and the film comes on, look at how many different logos you get for different production companies. These things are made from companies from all around the world who put money in or stump up some funds for it. Because look how expensive making a feature film can be these days. But yeah, he seems to think that Hollywood is still this area in Los Angeles where there's five or six big studios just making these products. The fact that there are places all around the world, and the UK being a very important one these days, where lots of film production takes place, doesn't seem to have sunk in to him yet. United Kingdom makes some of Hollywood's biggest budget movies. than the facilities that we have in this country for doing those types of films, has benefited from a huge amount of investment recently. Just for near where my sister lives, there's a huge studio complex just been built in Dagenham, of all places. Not a name you would immediately associate with glamour and glitz, but yeah, Dagenham. The fact is, I'm not sure if he knows anything about how much digital input there is to a film. I mean, the other week he didn't seem too sure as to what Photoshop was. So again, if you look at the credits of a film as it ends, as sadly I tend to do when I'm sitting in the cinema, you look at where all those software houses are that do special effects on almost any film these days. It's very rarely there's a film that's made that doesn't have a huge amount of digital manipulation to it. And these different companies can be all around the world. Some of the sound could be done in Scandinavia. There could be colour coordinating from somewhere in Japan. Foley sound systems could be done in Hollywood. Other bits could be done in Eastern Europe. And all of these things, and it's all stuff that's whizzed around on files across the internet. I'm not sure if Trump realises that there aren't big cans of film that are taken to every cinema these days to show a film. Great when it is, if you take the Parkway Cinema at Barnsley, close to us, as an example of that. But he seems just not to understand how the system works. And so I did a bit more digging on this, and I was looking around, well, can you imagine Trump ever going to the cinema? I mean, that's hard enough. It's like trying to imagine him reading a book. And I found this list of what his favourite films are. And in many ways, it sort of completely illustrates how he knows nothing about anything and associates himself with what he will think others might think is the best of everything. His five favourite films are Citizen Kane, and you think, well, yeah, it would be, wouldn't it, for many, many decades recognised as the greatest film ever made, so Trump would have to like that one, wouldn't he? The best. It's the best film that's ever made, but it's his most beautiful film. Beautiful, beautiful. And so that's fair enough. That one's he can tick that one. He also likes The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. Maybe in one of his fever dreams he sees himself as Clint Eastwood. And if you saw this week in another film-related bit from Donnie, he put out an image of himself as a Star Wars hero. He did the Pope the week before, so again, utter mad, a muscle-bound Star Wars hero he put himself up with. Then there's two other films which I think are more projections for his character, Goodfellas. And you can say, well, you know, he runs his government as if it's a criminal organisation. They're there to put pressure on people, extortion more than negotiation. And his fourth film is The Godfather. And I think we can all see where he sees himself in that particular film. But also, look, these are quite long films. Citizen Kane is probably the shortest. But Good, the Bad, the Ugly knocks on for 3 hours in its extended versions now. Similarly, Goodfellas is 2.5 hours, Godfather 3 hours. But the final film on his list is I think, maybe the most illustrative. Gone with the Wind. 4 hours of Gone with the Wind is what Trump claims is one of his favourite films. But there's something buried in the history of Gone With the Wind, which I think in some ways marks it up to be the perfect film for the MAGA crowd. For one thing, its depiction of black slaves in the Confederacy before and during the Civil War is very, very glaring. And there's an interesting story about it, because the black actor Hattie McDaniels won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress from the film. And she was the first black actor to win an Academy Award for her portrayal of Mammy, Scarlett's black slave. The whole thing is called, there's lots of controversy in the years since, that McDaniels is fulfilling a negative stereotype. That argument has swung back and forth to some saying, you know, she shouldn't have done it, it's wrong how that stereotype works, but also the fact that, and you have to admit it, it's an absolutely marvellous performance that she gives. Marvellous in the way that she subverts a lot of those stereotypes during the course of the film. But the thing that I found very, very worrying and quite sad, really, was at the Oscar ceremony that year when McDaniels was nominated for the award, she was at the ceremony, and she went up on stage and made a short but very moving speech about how she felt honoured for having got the award and the experience of having made the film. And then when she got down off stage, she had to walk right to the very, very back of the hall and sit at a table with just her and her agent, who was white. And this was because the hall had a strict segregation policy, and they only relented to let McDaniels into that hall because of that event that was taking place that night. Now, to me, if there's something that doesn't, there's something there that fits in so snugly with Trump's DEI policies, or should I say anti-DEI policies. And you can imagine there's plenty of them in that Trump administration right now who would just love it if we could all go back to those times and we could segregate, and Hattie McDaniels maybe not even be allowed to go into that ceremony this time. So enjoy your films, Donnie, and I'll be back with some more stuff about him after this next piece of music.
Machine.
Okay, I'm back. That was the awesome Ronnie Spector with Bruce Springsteen's E Street Band creating their very own wall of sound there for Say Goodbye to Hollywood, a Billy Joel number there. Incredible stuff. More Trump news on cinema. Alcatraz, beautiful Alcatraz. He's bringing Alcatraz back as a prison, allegedly. Alcatraz, the island prison, which sits in the middle of San Francisco Bay, although one of Trump's advisors did say on a Fox News show that they can move prisoners to the middle of the Pacific Ocean if they reopen Alcatraz. Yeah, okay, all right then. Moving on, and Alcatraz was closed, I think, in the early 60s when the cost of running the prison became just far too exorbitant, and the place was abandoned, and several years later it was taken over by some Native American protest groups who created a fortress there and were there for quite some time fighting off the San Francisco authorities. And the place itself has been a location for such films as The Birdman of Alcatraz, The Rock, and John Borman's Point Blank, where it's used right at the end in a very, very effective way. So people have already said, well, even now, the financials of doing this are just so prohibitive. It just wouldn't fly. And Trump said nothing else since then, although there has been another story that has come out, which again leans into you thinking, oh, well, that's why he mentioned it. And that was that Don Siegel's escape from Alcatraz, I left that one till last to mention, was actually on a television station in South Florida last weekend when Trump was there, as he is every weekend, playing golf. And of course, Escape from Alcatraz with Clint Eastwood tells the, well, it might be true, it might not be true, story of how someone did escape from Alcatraz. Trump was going on about something about, yes, someone we think was got away, and we found their clothes, and they had lots of shark bites in them, because Trump has a big thing about sharks as well. Again, gibberish, utter gibberish. From, I don't know, maybe watching 5 minutes of Escape from Alcatraz on the telly last weekend. Oh, you can feel safe in your beds at night, can't you? The other story, which was film-related, was a story about the First Lady, Melania Trump, who, according to reports, has so far, since Trump was inaugurated, moved into the White House, only spent 14 days in the White House, even though she has a wing of the White House set over for her and her staff. 14 days is what she spent. And on top of that, she has a deal which was made with Amazon for $40 million to make a documentary about her life. I mean, I'm sitting here scratching my head thinking, how do you spend $40 million on a documentary? There's got to be lots of CGI in that, I would have thought. Or CGI Donald, so it looks as though they're standing next to each other. And the film is being directed by Brett Ratner, who was once a big name in Hollywood until 2017, where some allegations were made about his behaviour during the first wave of the hashtag MeToo movement, and he's not worked since. So it would seem as though this has been a way for him to get back into paid employment. I don't know if Trump had to give him a pardon for this, but, you know, when you pardoned 1500 January the 6th rioters, what's a film director on top of that? And I think that's it for my Trumpathon there. Thank God you all stay at home. And I'm going to go into another piece of music now. And this is Dr. John and Hollywood Be Thy Name.
Got all that stuff. Hear that meditation on that FM station. Man, yeah, talk about some teeny boppers, bangle boppers. Just look at them traffic stoppers. Yeah, they're gonna take your heart. Thy kingdom coming. Thy will be done in earth like it is in Hollywood.
Woo, my darling, look at this fire. To ride with this little up and coming superstar. I'm gonna get on board wherever you are. Get that limousine all lined and green and get down with plastic scene all lean. Yes, you will.
Massage parlors, oh, silver studs and vibrators, and sell them on the street, you know. Hey, wait a minute. Every little bean seems to have a little read, but not only the women's lead when it's down to 7 seas.
Dr. John and Hollywood Be Thy Name there. You're listening to The Film Show on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM, and you can listen on digital, and you can listen via the website. Reviews. I've been to the pictures twice this week, which is pretty unusual for me these days. And I saw, well, one of them was good. First off, I went to see a preview of Motel Destino, a new Brazilian film that was at the Curzon, but it doesn't seem to be on at the Curzon this week, so I'm hoping this will end up being one that comes out in a week or two's time. But this is a very, very dark, sweaty, sexy movie, almost just a three-hander, two guys, one woman. It seems almost spending all their time in a sex motel just off the Brazilian coast. It's a very, very intense movie, which follows the story of a young man, Jorge, who wants to move to Sao Paulo and start a new life away from his criminal family. But he makes the mistake of not turning up to meet his brother to carry out a hit on one of the family's rivals. He has to escape. His brother is killed in the melee that follows, and he turns up, finds himself some sort of respite in this sex motel, Motel Destino, where the husband and wife who run the place are having a few marital difficulties, and the actual hotel itself is it's a very stark building. It's almost like a prison. A corridor with rooms, or which are more like cells, all the way along it. And there's constantly the sound of people having sex and moaning. It's quite an oppressive atmosphere that the film conjures up. And very soon the film sets up a situation which is very much like The Postman Always Rings Twice. Jorge begins an affair with the wife. They try and keep it from the husband, who has a very, very violent temper, and off it goes from there. I thought it was a stunning little film. It really was gripping, and three absolutely marvellous performances. And I just thought, this is the sort of thing, you know, if Hollywood wants to make films, make ones like this. Small casts and just really, really good scripts. And the director of the film, Karim Aynuz, had a film out earlier last year. He directed Firebrand, the film with about Henry VIII with Jude Law. So this is a pretty big sort of step away from that. I'd recommend it. I'd give it a rate. And then I'll move on to something else, which I wasn't so sure about. The Surfer, Nicolas Cage's new film, which there seems to be posters and trailers for everywhere. And if you've seen the trailer, you've seen him. Cage, just known as The Surfer, takes his teenage son to a beach where he used to surf when he was a young man, and where he's trying to buy a luxury apartment that looks out onto the sea. And as he and his son go down to the beach, they are stopped by some local surfers, and it starts getting very, very ugly. And this is the first 5 minutes of the film. And then the film goes through a couple of different permutations. Cage seems to stay at the beach. And the longer he's there, the more desperate his situation becomes, the more beatings and humiliations he seems to take from the locals. His phone runs out of charge, and he hasn't got a charger. He hasn't got any money on him. He hasn't got any money to buy a cup of coffee, so he gives the guy at the coffee stand his watch, and of course never gets his watch back. He becomes hotter, sweatier, more and more forlorn and decrepit, going through all sorts of humiliations at the hands of the locals. And there are also little flash forwards or flashbacks within it. So the whole thing is, well, you know what, by the end of it, I didn't know. And I think some of the problem for me was it was like too quick going into this situation where, you know, after 10 minutes, you would have thought, you know what, get in your car and drive away. This isn't going to be good. It even sort of gets a bit Wicker Man-ish towards the end. And if you've seen Nicolas Cage's version of The Wicker Man, you know that is not a place you need to go, ever. And it just went on and on for too long, like ratcheting up the pain that it was putting Cage's character through. And by the end of it, I wasn't sure what it was all supposed to mean. Has it all happened in his head? I don't know. So for me, this was a frustrating viewing. But if you like your Cage, his Cagiest, you'll probably suffer through it. But I've got to say, once was enough for me, and I don't think I'll be going back. But, you know, it's a Nicolas Cage film. What more do you want? Right, just a bit more music. And this is a sad story about the bad ways that going to Hollywood to try and get a career can affect you. This song was out in the 70s. I used to hate it in the 70s, but I've grown to love it. Harpo, movie star.
James Bond, when you're smoking your cigar, it's so bizarre. You think you are a new kind of James Dean, but the only thing I've ever seen of you was a commercial spot on the screen. Movie star, oh movie star. Jet set, fly your own private Learjet. But you worked in the grocery store every day until you could afford to get away. So you went to Sweden to meet Ingmar Bergman. He wasn't there, or he just didn't care. I think it's time for you, my friend, to stop pretending that you are a star. You think you are a movie star. You think you are a movie star. Frozen hero, your words are zero.
Harpo there, and movie star. I think I've ranted too long about Donald Trump on this show, and I'm running out of time a bit. So there was another thing I was going to tell you about on reviews, but it will wait until next week, as it's on Netflix, and you'll see that I don't always complain about Netflix stuff. I had one more piece of music to play in the run of things, and it's I think this is a great song about failure. as was Harpo's movie star. And it's used brilliantly in the film Greenberg. And this is Albert Hammond, which I think this is probably maybe the saddest song ever recorded. It Never Rains in Southern California.
Got on board a westbound 747. Didn't think before deciding what to do. All that talk of opportunities, TV breaks and movies rang true. Sure. Seems it never rains in Southern California. Seems I've often heard that kind of talk before. It never rains in California, but girl, don't they warn ya? It pours, man, it pours. I'm out of bread. I'm underloved. I'm underfed. I wanna go home. It never rains in California, but girl, don't they warn ya? It pours, man, it pours.
Tell them how you found me. Give me a break. Give me a break. Seems it never rains in Southern California. Seems I've often heard that kind of talk before.
Albert Hammond there, and It Never Rains in Southern California. I'm sorry we've had a few hiccups with the CD player, but I think we managed to get through it okay. Films starting next week, there is Final Destination Bloodlines, which is the sixth film in the franchise, although the last one was made way back in 2011. So they've scraped the barrel there to make another film out of that. There's one called Hurry Up Tomorrow, which has Jenny Ortega and Barry Keoghan in it. But I watched the trailer, and it came up with From the Visionary Director, Trey Edward Schultz. so I won't be going to see that. It's probably his masterpiece. If you want to see something interesting, there is a new documentary out about the director Leni Riefenstahl, and who was Hitler's favourite filmmaker, and who made Triumph of the Will and Olympiad. If you've seen Ray Muller's epic 3.5-hour documentary about her, you'll know a lot about her. This new film has had access to her files, recordings that Muller didn't have. It's not to say that you shouldn't watch Muller's film as well, but Riefenstahl is on at the showroom this week. Okay, I'm going to wind up. I don't know if Denise will be back next week, but I don't know. We'll get through. I'll definitely get out of the William Shatner albums next week if Denise isn't here. So have a great week, everyone. As I say, enjoy your films. And I've got to go out on a bit of a high note, and it's got to be Hollywood. It's got to be show business, because there is no business like show business, and there is no Hollywood star like Ethel Merman.
Turkeys.